Hi, it's Karen Webster for Payments.com, and I'm here today with Jesse Lund, Global Blockchain and Digital Strategy Executive at IBM. Jesse, thanks for joining me today.
My pleasure.
The occasion for our conversation is news that IBM just broke about the launch of a new blockchain banking solution aimed at cross-border transactions. The solution is now live and processing transactions in 12 currency corridors in the Pacific Islands, Australia, New Zealand, and the UK. So congratulations on the launch. But let's start with the basics. What problem did you see and want to solve for, and for whom?
Yeah, thanks. So, well, We've been working with banks and financial institutions for decades in the payment space. So this is not a new foray for IBM. We've been involved in payments enablements for a really long time, and this is the natural extension to the partnerships that we have with some of the leading banks and financial institutions all around the world. What we've seen up until this point is very little investment in the infrastructure of global payments, say in the last, you know, 3 or 4 decades. And so by way of the emergence of blockchain technology, kind of provides the tipping point for a new type of transactional business network, which is really what blockchain at IBM is all about. Mm-hmm. And so the problem that we're actually solving with this is a very inefficient and disjointed process of sending money between two counterparties in two different parts of the world, where the starting point and the ending point are typically two different currencies. So there's different banks in different countries involved in representing different counterparties, whether they're businesses or whether they're consumers. It's pretty commonplace nowadays in the world of, you know, the global economy and the internet to be able to buy and sell things across borders. And what was a process that took days to even weeks to complete in finality, now with blockchain technology and with this IBM universal payment solution, takes seconds.
So that's really what you've done, is you've reduced the settlement and enabled the money to move instantly. Because as I'm listening to you describe it, you know, we have been sending money around the world for decades, and it seems to work pretty well. It's just not as fast as it could be.
Yeah, I mean, from a consumer standpoint, it's not as fast as it could be. But from the institutions that support the actual movement of money, it's a lot less efficient than it looks to mm-hmm. the end user. Mm-hmm. And that's because, you know, money doesn't physically move around the world. We're not loading up cash on pallets and putting them on airplanes every night. What happens is we're making, you know, book entries based on payment messages that are coming, you know, in between banks on one network, and they're making ledger entries on bank accounts that, you know, one bank holds at another bank account in a different country. And all of these things need to get reconciled. And so, you know, there's a big manual process of reconciliation that creates a whole bunch of inefficiency, which in turn creates cost. So, you know, our goal really being, you know, a payments enablement provider is to provide a better operational efficiency model for all the banks that we work with.
So Jesse, describe how it works. I know that according to the announcement, you've partnered with Stellar and ClickX. How does this new network function?
Right. So, let me start with ClickX. ClickX is really the inaugural subscriber on the network. They're a small financial institution in the Pacific who was started as a financial inclusion play funded by the United Nations and by SWIFT. I think they were the winner of the InnoTribe startup contest several years ago. What they are doing is bringing payment volume forward as they're looking to expand their network into different regions. They're wanting to partner with IBM in order to leverage the blockchain as a new type of transactional business network. So they've come to us really and said, help us understand blockchain and let's partner together so that we can turn this payment network that we have into a blockchain-based network. We've been partnered with Stellar now for the last 6 or 7 months. As part of this, Stellar is joining the Hyperledger project, and Stellar provides the blockchain network that supports settlement. So Hyperledger Fabric supports the payment instruction and clearing component of this, and Hyperledger Stellar now supports the settlement. And the way that it really works is there is this notion of a digital asset. Unlike any of the other models that are out there today, or at least the ones that we've worked on, this makes use of a digital asset that provides the ability to bridge the two currencies, right? Mm-hmm. So cross-border implies there's a foreign exchange component. Mm-hmm. And by using a digital asset that can be literally transmitted, it's a negotiable means of exchange between the two counterparties, we can bring together for the first time the payment instruction and clearing component mm-hmm. and the settlement component onto a single integrated network and mm-hmm. put it behind a very simple standards-based API and allow counterparties to come together and join this network and settle payments with each other without a whole lot of work.
So Jesse, is this a way for ClickX and financial institutions like them? They sound, you know, very small and specialized to scale themselves in delivering services that go beyond what they could do in their own in their own region of the world?
I think the answer to that is yes. But really, the reason that we started with ClickX and we kind of found each other a little bit throughout this process as we've been exploring and researching this technology over the past couple of years, really, we have also 15 banks, I think, that were named in our release. Mm-hmm. There are several other large banks that are involved in this initiative. The idea is to expand this not just for, you know, small regional players, but for the large banks mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm. So the target, you know, market or network subscriber is not just small guys. In fact, we think the big banks have as much operational efficiency to gain out of this as anybody.
So how does this scale? How do FIs become part of this network, and how do you grow this beyond the 15 banks that you have today as part of the initial launch?
Well, the approach that we've taken in terms of our go-to-market strategy, really this represents the evolution and the next step in the evolution of bringing blockchain from, you know, concept to, you know, a transactional reality, right? So we started with this region of the world. We started with something small and manageable because this is somewhere between a pilot and a full-blown production implementation, in so much as we're processing live mm-hmm. transactions, mm-hmm. monetary transactions, in a very controlled environment. And so we've invited all of these other 15 banks and a few more to join, and we expect that there will be more that signaled their interest. Beginning in 2018, we're going to be working with these banks to develop a commercial model for this and to develop the governance model for this, and to work with the banks to prioritize those corridors of their cross-border payments business that they want to optimize. And so while I can't necessarily tie existing customer names to specific corridors, I'd be happy to tell you about, you know, some of the corridors that we've been talking about. But I think what will happen is this network will expand by way of the priorities of the banks, who are not only the subscribers in the network, but also our partners mm-hmm. in this endeavor overall.
And are these efforts intended to replace what we have today, complement what we have today? I mean, what's the thinking with respect to, you know, FIs that facilitate this movement of money, but also there are other players that today move money around the world. How do you see those networks surviving or complementing or not this particular initiative or initiatives like them?
Well, I think a lot of the networks that that exists today, whether it's, you know, the correspondent banking network, which isn't really a network, it's just kind of the affiliation of all these banks that have these, you know, cross-border relationships, or whether it's very well-defined financial networks like some of the credit card companies, by the way, all of which are long-standing, valuable clients of IBM. We kind of view this as an investment in the infrastructure, in the plumbing of payments that will help make their operation more efficient, if that makes sense. So what we envision is that nobody's going to jump to this technology overnight.
Right.
But if we can provide an alternative financial rail that provides a lot more efficiency in terms of, you know, some of the attributes that you even mentioned, you know, to make it go faster or to make it work less expensively or to reduce the amount of friction between counterparties or endpoints, that the FIs, large and small, are going to start to migrate their transaction volume over to this where it makes sense. I don't envision that it will entirely replace the construct of what is correspondent banking today, but I think it will optimize it to the point that the whole industry will start to morph, to take on new shape and a more efficient behavior.
Interesting. You know, final question is this, you know, blockchain and crypto, you know, they're buzzwords, and the news about the various initiatives that are being launched and being invested in, you know, it's overwhelming. It's a wave that crashes every day, you know, in our inbox at payments.com with, you know, so many different things going on. I'm sure it's very confusing to FIs that are trying to sort it all out and decide where to invest, how to invest, and how to pick the places where, to your point, it does make sense. How do you help FIs decide? What do you talk to them about?
Well, I think we talk to them about a lot of things. We definitely talk to them about cryptocurrencies and digital currencies. We also talk to the regulators quite a bit. But, you know, it's not just us bringing the expertise to the table. I mean, the FIs understand their business very well, and they're bringing a lot of concerns that we are, you know, adapting to and responding to as a solutions provider. So one example is, you know, to your point, the advent of cryptocurrencies has created this notion of a global, autonomous, you know, real-time growth settlement system that's managed as a, you know, a distributed autonomous organization, right? And that at first blush, that sounds kind of cool. You know, conceptually, that sounds kind of exciting, but when you see things that have happened, you know, like with the DAO in the past, and you know, maybe some of these systems not being ready for prime time yet, it causes pause to, you know, to banks. What IBM is trying to do and has been focused on since the onset of its blockchain program is taking blockchain technology and making it ready for the enterprise, making it real and making it ready for the enterprise. And so in some ways, what we're talking to them, to our clients about is, how do you take the concepts of the promise of, you know, a cryptocurrency or a distributed autonomous payment network and bring it together in a more permissioned model that has more semblance of, you know, true regulatory control and monetary policy built into it. That's really, I think, where the discussions are starting to coalesce these days.
Yeah, no, and I think it's great to have those discussions. Unfortunately, I think cryptocurrency has just developed a very unsavory reputation, given, you know, the Bitcoin phenomenon and how easy it is just to establish a cryptocurrency. There are 1,000 of them now. And I think, you know, deconstructing blockchain and digital assets and cryptocurrency, I think, are conversations worth having with FIs, because they are different.
They are. And one thing I would say in that concept of what I would call a conceptual convergence, right, where the ideas that are novel but more the implementation may not have been the best from the crypto side, taking those concepts, where I see the real interesting conversion happening is in the involvement with the central banks. Mm-hmm. Because technically speaking, there is nothing preventing any central bank from issuing a digital denomination of their fiat currency. And so then the question becomes, if there are digital assets that are out there, and in some ways this universal payment solution is kind of betting on mm-hmm. the future of more viable digital assets becoming available, mm-hmm. like those issued by a central bank, that tends to change the game a lot. And I wonder what it does to kind of the pure play cryptocurrency markets when you see more stable and, you know, regulated entities coming into this game. I think I saw a press release yesterday with Putin announcing that Russia is going to issue an e-ruble. I think that's interesting. That's profound.
Well, and I think that to me is a digital asset. It's a digital currency that is the fiat currency. It's not the Jesse coin or the Karen coin that we're just throwing out there because it skirts the existing regulatory and financial system and allows different things to happen as a result. So I think we need a new word. Everything can't be crypto.
Yeah, I agree. I do. I think we need to change the language for sure.
Well, Jesse, it's been a pleasure getting to know the initiative, getting a little bit more detail about it, and getting introduced to you. Thanks very much for your time today.
Karen, thank you so much.
And best of luck to you. Thank you.